Now, on Bulldog Live, it's Second Amendment Tuesday. Joining Bulldog is attorney Penny Dean.
1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here for Bulldog Lives with attorney Penny Dean. Second Amendment Tuesdays right here on The Pulse.
Now, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up. At least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
Steve Voss would come and take it as he introduces us here every week on Bulldog Live with attorney Penny Dean, Second Amendment Tuesdays. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, boy. It's been a busy morning already.
Well, the whole thing is it just never ends, does it?
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, today we departed from the other heavy topics of the day and just focused on the Pearl Harbor remembrances.
Oh, yeah.
So... it was an interesting conversation we had right at the start of the program. So,
oh my God,
yeah.
So I'll tell you what. It just we have to fight every day for our freedom.
That's right.
Absolutely every day. And there's kind of an interesting case that came down, and it's not directly on point as far as the Second Amendment goes, but it's State of New Hampshire v. David Ord, and it was a case where a gentleman had evidently had trouble with his dog. And so the Hollis Police Department went to the defendant's home to serve a dog complaint, no less.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when Mr. Ord, who was not there, didn't answer the front door, they walked around to the back door and the side door, and they said, and they went on Mr. Ord's deck. And the opinion says the driveway leading from the road to the home is approximately 30 or 40 feet long, and nothing restricted him from entering the driveway. And so in this particular case, I'm very, very gratified to see that the Supreme Court found that Mr. Ord had a privacy expectation in his property. But in his particular case, they went around to the back of the house to a deck, and there was no path from the side door to the deck. And the deck had a set of stairs, okay? But they didn't have any no trespassing signs, and they didn't have any type of gate guarding the deck.
Mm-hmm. And so but there was I think there was some shrubbery that might have been surrounding that deck.
That's exactly right. Okay. There was shrubbery around the deck. And so the court found that that was enough for an expectation of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, there's been some contrary cases in the past. And so I'm very gratified to see that. But here's what I tell people. In the David Ord case, the court found Mr. Ord had an expectation of privacy, and the items found were suppressed, which means they can't be used against Mr. Ord.
The items in this case being
marijuana plants. Marijuana plants, absolutely. Mm-hmm. He was growing marijuana plants on his deck. And so the bottom line... Out of plain view, that's exactly
okay.
Right. They were hidden from the road. No one could see them. You had to actually go in Mr. Ord's driveway, down his driveway, walk around back of his house to his deck and go up the steps and kind of, you know, it wouldn't have been easily seen from his driveway. It couldn't have been seen from his driveway, mm-hmm. the road, or anything else. You had to go out behind his house. Now, the thing that I warn people, though, is that is what I call a good case. It's a fair case. But I've seen some other cases with similar facts go the other way. So I tell people, keep those no trespassing signs up. Keep the defenses up and keep all of those other things up. And people say, well, this is Second Amendment Tuesdays. What does that have to do with gun owners?
Because they're the same principles of law that apply.
The same principles of law that apply, but the Fourth Amendment can sometimes save firearm owners in cases where they're improperly charged, unfairly charged. And what we lawyers say is any win is a good win. And so in this particular case, let's say there have been firearms that they've alleged you've done something wrong with. If you can suppress those, if you can keep them out, then all of the other usually unfair charges go away.
Mm-hmm.
And because example is to this day, both some police and some press use the term semi-auto and full auto interchangeably. They'll say an automatic pistol. For example, it goes to our second case, which is a home invasion, and it happened in Nashua. Evidently, a gentleman allegedly owed a prostitute money for sex, and she didn't think she was getting her money, and so she comes into the home, she and another gentleman allegedly, and conducted a home invasion. Whether or not it was the proper home or not, I don't know, but I think in this particular instance, what's important to know is that the press talk about her automatic Glock pistol. Now, unless that Glock has been illegally converted, we know that a Glock is a semi-automatic.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look at, you know, how they use terms and language, and if they don't use terms and language accurately, what else is not being done correctly? And so you look at this particular case of the home invasion, and what happened in this particular case is that these two individuals invaded a home, and you've got a family in that home and four children. Okay, and she is waving this firearm around looking for a gentleman who allegedly lives there. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, we have a woman and man doing a home invasion and a couple inside saying, look, Johnny Joe or whoever you're looking for is not here. You know, you have the wrong place. He's not here. And the question is, at what point do these people have a right to defend themselves? Now, in this particular case, the suspect, who is Pelletier and Zubaba, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, left. But the question is, what if the people that invade your home don't leave? What if they stand there? At what point do you defend yourself? And at what point do you coordinate with your family? And I think this particular instance is another wake-up call to people in the state, is just as you have fire drills in your house, or you should have with your children, just have as you have all sorts of other safety drills, you should have a plan in place for things like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell people you should have a plan in place. What do we do? Where do we shoot from here? Because if you're the average mom and pop and you have children in the house, you want to make sure that you're not defending yourself or shooting in a direction where the children are, right?
Right.
You know, because you think, okay. And that's why I tell people you really need to be aware of your situation at all time. Know when your kids are home. Know when you're not home, because it would be a horrible, horrible thing to fire a firearm when you think your children aren't home in a certain direction, and lo and behold, Johnny came home early.
Mm.
You know, we could absolutely have some tragic results there. And so you look at those things and you say, okay, the Constitution is taking care of Second Amendment Tuesdays. In other words, they're taking care of what you can and can't do in this state, most recently with this decision in Ord, and say, okay, you have an expectation of privacy even on your deck, okay? And then we say, how does that sync with Ward Byrd, who was in his front door area? He was in his area, and he didn't have the right to defend himself yet there, but yet they had an expectation of privacy on their deck. Does that sync, or does that make sense to you?
Well, I would think, considering how far away that deck was from the main road and how many signs were posted along the driveway leading up to the property and how many times she had been told by the person who greeted her in the beginning of the property to go away, I would think he's got a reasonable expectation of privacy.
That's my point. And my point is, the same Supreme Court decided this case as decided the Ward Byrd case. And mm-hmm. So my point is, how does that make any type of sense to you? Or the question you have to ask yourself, okay, is, was Ward Byrd treated differently because he had a firearm?
That's a good question.
You know, I mean, because you read this decision and you go to that because you say, okay, if Ward Byrd had an expectation of privacy at this point, at what point did she violate that? And at what point was he definitely allowed to verbally say to her, leave and go on your way?
Well, let me ask this question, because I guess it comes down to the legal questions that you bring up in trial, and that is the approaches that you make. Did Ward Byrd approach this from a privacy standpoint or from a self-defense standpoint? Whereas the Hollis case, I would suspect, the case was argued from the right to privacy standpoint from the very beginning, so therefore, you know, different arguments, different results.
You know, from what I've read, I understand. I say I understand because I've not read the trial transcripts. I've not read all the appellate pleadings. My understanding is the Ward Byrd case brought a two-pronged attack. My understanding is they did make the privacy argument.
Okay.
And I say my understanding because I've not read everything. And so my understanding is the court put that aside as being a lesser argument and focused on the self-defense. But the issue that I have to still ask myself is, are courts treating Second Amendment issues as what I call poor stepchildren, redheaded stepchildren, no less?
Right.
Because, and by the way, I like red hair, but, you know, it's the standard.
My mother's a redhead.
Your mother's a redhead. It's a standard expression. You know, I always tell people that's an expression. Don't all the redheads call and curse me. But the bottom line is that we have to ask ourselves is, what's happening here? Why is David Ord, you know, obviously the court reversed and remanded it, as which I think was a correct decision in that particular case. And by reverse and remand, what the court has said in Mr. Ord's case is they're reversing the decision of allowing the court, the lower court, the trial court, to use the evidence pertaining to the marijuana plants found on his deck. But if the police have any other evidence against him, excluding that, they will be allowed to use it against him in a retrial. And so people always say, well, reverse and remanded, what does that mean? And I always tell people the biggest word you always want to hear in an appellate decision, you want to hear the word reversed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that means it's all done. When you hear reversed and remanded, that means the person gets to be retried.
Yeah.
So it's just a little bit of legal lesson to tell people that the term reversed you really like. Reversed and remanded, it's like, oh, we have to go do this again. You know, we have to go back through it.
But sometimes they may not even try to retry the case if they know that the evidence does not pass muster how the evidence was obtained.
Right. Well, they won't be able to bring in that evidence at all. They'll only be able to bring in any other evidence they have against him. That evidence has been suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In other words, and so they're going to have to say, okay, do we have any other evidence that's not tainted by what's called the fruit of the poisonous tree, that it wasn't gathered as a result of this evidence that we can use?
Okay.
And so that's the thing that the court's going to be looking at. And then the lawyers are going to make all sorts of arguments. It's a very famous case out of California called Wong Sung. And it's what's called the fruit of the poisonous tree, which means that if you hadn't found this marijuana on the deck, you therefore couldn't have found these other things. So therefore, the defense will argue correctly that it's tainted. It's what's called the fruit of the poisonous tree.
Mm-hmm.
But for this, where the prosecution will argue, no, we independently located all these other items, that even if we hadn't located the marijuana plants on the deck, we would have independently found X, Y, and Z.
And I guess that all comes down to, proper searches and the like, because as we always tell people, don't consent to a search.
Absolutely. And in this particular case, Mr. Ord was gone.
He wasn't even home at this time.
He wasn't home at the time all of this happened. So he didn't have the opportunity to object or consent. But that's exactly right. You always, always, always say that. And in the tactic that's used all the time, I tell people, if you ever watch any of those police shows they have on TV at night, there's a whole plethora of them.
Yes.
Watch those shows, because the tactics that are used because they're effective. And you can watch those tactics being used on you and don't succumb to them. I've had clients say to me, why did you let them do that? Well, they told me that they were just going to go get a search warrant anyhow. And my answer is, if they could get a search warrant, they'd have a search warrant. They can't get one. They're tricking you. Haven't you watched those TV shows? And they're like, oh, yeah.
Because I guess, you know, the argument can come into the plain view provision or exception or the concept that they say, okay, well, you know, they would have reasonable suspicion, you know, like say, you know, they find a bag of pot on the back seat when they pulled you over for speeding. Well, that's plain view. They got you there.
Maybe and maybe not. And here's
really?
Absolutely. Here's a couple things. The question is, was the stop proper? Now, if you were clearly speeding and they said, look, you know, all the other traffic is going 65 and this guy whizzed past him like Sunday, they might have an argument, yes, you were clearly speeding and they properly pulled you over. But there are many, many instances where, let's say, they say you did or didn't do something. It really becomes a question of fact as to whether or not what you did was enough against the law to pull you over. For example, I had a DWI case where I did extensive research across the country, and what we found is many, many courts across the country, all of us at one time or the other have weaved over the white or yellow line just a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And many, many courts have found that's not enough of a basis to pull you over. Now, if you weave across those yellow line 10 times in a row, that's a different thing. But one inadvertent strain over or on a white or yellow line is not a basis to pull you over.
Wow.
Yeah, so people, you always do what I tell people. here's the way I describe it, is you start in the basement when you build a house, right? You don't build the roof first, you build the basement first,
mm-hmm.
and you go up from there. And it's the same way in cases regarding a motor vehicle stop or any type of initiation of contact with the police. The proper inquiry is you start at the very beginning. What made the police officer pull you over? Why did the cop pull you over? And you look, was he really justified in doing that to begin with? Because if he isn't, everything else that flows from it, let's say the marijuana laying on the back seat, that needs to be suppressed. Because if he didn't have a basis to initiate contact with you to begin with, okay, then there's no reason that all of that other, let's say, illegal information or stuff can come in. And so, for example, that's why when I tell people if you're out walking, like I go walking a lot, and if a cop stops you and says, hey, whatever, my answer to them always is, am I being detained? Because if I'm not being detained, I'm going to continue my walk. If I am being detained, obviously you have to stop so you don't get charged with disobeying a police officer. You have to stop and you have to engage them. But the first thing you need to say in every one of those instances is, am I free to go and am I being detained? Because here's what happens. Let's say you stop and engage them in conversation. The court's going to find that was consensual conversation. So officer, the minute you engage in that consensual conversation, he can next do a protective pat down for officer safety. And you say, wait a minute, I stopped to say hi to officer friendly, and he gets to pat my down my body to see. Yeah. And the argument the courts have made is that he needs to know that he's safe from your illegal weapons or regular weapons.
Right.
And I have, as an ideological matter, a problem with that, that the presumption that I as a citizen, nothing more walking down the street, would justify an officer patting me down for his safety, because the presumption is that I'm a danger to his safety.
I follow that.
Yeah.
Well, Penny, I got to take the time out right here. We're a little bit late doing so, but people can call in with their questions at 1-866-823-1077 as we continue our conversation with Attorney Penny Dean here on Second Amendment Tuesdays on Bulldog Live on the Pulse.
Bulldog Live will continue after these messages, live on the Pulse.